This podcast is a Majestic Giraffe production. For more information and more content, visit majesticgiraffe.com.
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
Droids are clean, the vaporizers are patched, and the speeders fuel. It's time to pick up some blue milk and power converters. You're listening to Toshi Station Radio, brought to you by the Majestic Giraffe Network. Now here are your hosts for the Snarkiest Podcast in Star Wars and Geek Culture, Brian and Nancy.
From the outskirts of Anchorhead and on the shores of the Great Chott Flats, you're listening to Toshi Station Radio, the bright center in the universe for all things Star Wars and geek culture. I'm your host, Brian, and with me, as always, is my co-host and wife, Nancy.
Hi!
On today's episode, we're chatting with Sabine My Rebel Sketchbook artist Annie Stoll. We're about to get started, so sit back, grab some power converters, and enjoy the show. Before we go too much further, again, that's Annie Stoll we got on today. Bria will be here as well for the interview, and we'll cut to that a little later. But a note from our sponsors, Toshi Station Radio is brought to you in part by Audible.com. Listeners to this podcast can get a free audiobook by signing up for a free trial. Click the link on Toshi-Station.net for more details.
And we're also brought to you in part by Her Universe. Fill out your world with Star Wars, Star Trek, Marvel, Transformers, Doctor Who, and other fandom-inspired wardrobe and jewelry. Click the link on our blog to purchase awesome geek gear and keep the lights running on the podcast.
And they've got a new product out this week y'all might be interested in.
Yes, they do.
Care to tell us what that might be, Nancy?
No, I'm going to wait until next week.
We're going to wait until next week?
We're not spoiling this week.
Okay.
Hi.
We
will next week.
Yes, but if you saw the Rebels finale, go check out the site because yes. You may want the shirt.
Yes.
It's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Nancy, what's new on the blog?
Well, we've got several items. We got a bunch of reviews. Bria reviewed Heir to the Jedi, the new book by Kevin Hearn. And we also put up a spoiler-free go, no-go on release day, which was Tuesday.
Do we want to do a quick rundown on that right now?
We can do it now, or we can do it in Fixer's Flash.
Let's do it now, since we already brought it up.
No-go.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I feel bad about it, too, because I really wanted to like this book a lot more than I did.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it uses a trope near the end of the book, which is a deal-breaker trope for me. So I really can't recommend it on that.
Yes.
On that issue.
I'll be posting a blog post on Friday.
Addressing the trope.
Yep. So, if you've gone ahead and read the book, or don't care about spoilers, go ahead and read that. But, yep. Bria also reviewed Darth Vader number 2, which came out on last week. And Princess Leia number 1 comes out this week, so she'll have a review of that later on. She also did a write-up of the cosplay she saw at KatsuCon, which was a few weeks ago. So she posted some of the pictures that she had. And Brian reviewed Rebels Resolve, the second to last episode of Rebels. I started my Dark Force Rising retrospective.
Yay!
I haven't been regular on it, but I hope to be coming soon.
Just need to add some more fiber to that retrospective.
Yes. And
it's like low-hanging fruit for 500. Alex? I'm being glared at right now.
What?
Add more fiber, low-hanging fruit, really easy joke.
I don't get it.
Moving on. Someone in the listening audience got it.
Okay. You said regular. You go away. And also, there's finally a go-no-go for Jupiter Ascending, which Sho and Bria both liked. So check it out.
Check it out.
Sorry, I'm adjusting my mic because I can't see over it when it's in my face.
Unfortunately, this is a front address mic.
Yes, but I can't see the show notes, so...
I just slid the laptop over about 3 inches.
That's what I've been trying to do.
Nancy is now sticking her tongue out at me.
Yes.
We are a professional outfit, Tashi Station Radio.
We're a husband and wife. That's what we are. Your microphone is not front-facing.
It's a lot more front-facing than yours.
Whatever.
And on that note, it's Fixer's Flash, the geeky things we've been up to, and we start with Agent Carter, which is perfect and wonderful.
Yes, it's the best show besides Rebels, but it's awesome, and yeah, you should definitely, definitely watch it.
And Marvel should definitely, definitely do a second season.
Yes, man. Yeah, it was so good. I was really impressed with the entire show, and the fact that they could tell a story like that in 8 episodes, you know, it kind of makes me wish. I mean, I would be fine if they brought the show back for another 8 episodes and that's it. Like, if that's what they do with 8 episodes, keep doing that.
Yeah, it was
like, I'm glad that season 2 of Rebels is going to be longer, but I'm kind of worried because I don't want it to suffer.
Yeah, but at the same time, some stuff in the first season did feel rushed, and we'll talk about this more next week, so I think there is some benefit to going from a 13 to 22 episode run, especially for a show that has an episode runtime of 22 minutes.
Yeah. So agreed.
That's a show that can probably benefit from a longer run, which is why we're excited about Rebels having a longer run next season.
Yes. We watched Rebels and it had a fantastic season finale. And we'll be talking about it next week with Tom, a.k.a. Darth Internus from Del Rey. So,
yes, we're finally getting his magic Rebels live tweeting powers.
In live on the podcast.
In audio form for your listening pleasure. We love you, listeners.
Yes, I'm
very excited. We've been wanting to get Tom on here for a long time.
Yes, so we will be talking all about the season as a whole, the season finale, spoilers abound, and
things we're hoping to see next season.
Quick recap. I loved it. So I cheered.
Good. So good.
I cheered. I was so happy. I want to watch it again tonight, and seriously.
We had to go back and rewatch spoiler, because we were cheering so much, we missed most of spoiler.
Yes. The only thing I could think of after I'd calmed down was, I hope that The Force Awakens makes me feel like Rebels has just made me feel. Because that's what I want from Star Wars.
Yeah. It was so good, people. It was so good!
It was so good.
I am praying that the MLS season starts on time, Major League Soccer.
I put that in for you.
Oh, thank you. They're currently working on a collective bargaining agreement right now, and if they don't reach it, probably before the end of tonight, the players will go on strike, and the owners will lock the players out, and the season will not start. And let's check my sports Twitter. Is there an update? The player union is actually voting on a CBA offer right now. So here's hoping for good news, because I like my soccer.
And Orlando City has a new team this year.
Yep, Orlando City SC, and they've sold out 60,000 for their first game.
Yes, they have.
That's exciting.
I know a few people at work who are going to be going, so.
I wish we could go.
I know.
I also finished Heir to the Jedi, which again we'll be talking about in a couple of weeks. And hey, we've got staff writer Sho staying with us and hitting the theme parks this week.
Yes.
We'd have her on right now to say hi to everyone, but alas, she's at the theme parks.
She's at the magical, most magical of kingdoms.
The most magical of kingdoms.
Yes.
So follow her on Twitter for park updates, because those are always fun.
Yep. And I've been working on a short story.
Ooh. And I will be reading over short story tonight, so you can submit it this week.
Yes, you should.
And time for Deke's Dirt, but we're going to have to start with some sad news. From the other Star franchise, Leonard Nimoy passed away last week. It's very sad because Leonard Nimoy was one of the good ones.
He was everyone's grandpa, even people who don't care about Star Trek like me.
He so ridiculously well-respected, mm-hmm. great human being. He will be missed.
Yeah.
Sad news there. But he certainly did live long and did prosper and inspired many, many people.
Yes.
So, Leonard Nimoy, we will miss him.
Indeed.
In some happier news, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, is going to be a voice on season 2 of Rebels.
Yes. She tweeted a picture of her in the studio. Her and her husband, Freddie Prinze Jr., had some playful ribbing about that. And, of course, speculation is rampant about who she will be playing. I'm thinking she's probably going to be playing a new, completely new character.
Yeah, someone we haven't met before.
People have said, oh, she could play Mon Mothma. But the voice actress who played Mon Mothma in Clone Wars is the voice actress who plays Maketh Tua in Rebels.
So they probably have a Mon Mothma on retainer.
Yeah, they've got a Mon Mothma. Other people have
also
said...
Also, Sarah Michelle Gellar does not sound like a Mon Mothma.
Yeah. Also, people have said Leia, to which I reply, why do they need someone to play Leia when they have Cat Taper?
Yeah. Although, all I ask is that Dave Filoni write some Buffy speak just for Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah.
I don't care what, just some Buffy speak.
Yeah.
Makes me happy.
She could play a robot.
She could play a droid. That'd be awesome.
Buffy Bot
returns.
Yeah.
Go watch Buffy if you haven't seen it, kids.
Yes. Also, there was a bunch of new names added to the Celebration guest list, including Palpatine himself, Ian McDiarmid. Yay! I'm happy. Celebration 6 was his first Celebration, but he was also in Celebration Europe, so... Hopefully he will be a regular because he's very interesting and has a lot of cool stories to tell.
And John Morton's on there, who we really do have to finally schedule to come on the show. We've got an open invitation.
Interview him at Celebration.
No, actually, that's a neat idea. I mean, we could make that happen.
Since we're going to be having our equipment there anyway, we might as well get some interviews.
Yeah, as we mentioned on our last episode, we are going to be doing our podcast, Tosche Station Radio, from the podcast stage at Celebration, and that requires us to actually bring our own equipment. So I'm going to have all that stuff handy.
Yeah.
Except I'm probably going to have to buy a new mixer.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. And also, kind of a sad piece of news.
Sad for us as Star Wars fans, but good for the convention industry as a whole.
Yeah, Mary Franklin, who was the basically in charge of fan relations, fan events, all the stuff at Lucasfilm. She's been there for 14 years. She was hired by Steve Sansweet. She took control and basically is the mastermind behind all Celebrations and everything. She's leaving Lucasfilm and going to work at ReadPop. Thankfully, ReadPop is the company that is running Star Wars Celebrations right now and hopefully will continue to do so, and Mary will keep working on Celebrations. So.
I mean, it's a bummer for Lucasfilm to lose Mary, but ReadPop is gaining one hell of a showrunner.
Yeah.
Mary has been absolutely brilliant in overseeing Celebration, and ReadPop is extremely lucky to have her. You just look at how Celebration is run, and for me, it's the best run convention in the U.S.
If you look at Celebration compared to other cons, and you say, well, why does this work so well? Celebration has had many years to, you know, improve, but also it's the people who work on Celebration, and Mary's definitely a huge part of that. So,
yeah, and Celebration isn't actually that old of a convention. Mm-hmm. It's one of the younger cons out there, but it's already, it holds its own with any of the major, with any of the major cons. So, yeah, and so much of that has to do with Mary Franklin's leadership,
yeah,
working with Reed, Pop, and Lucasfilm. So, you know what? Mary's going to make a whole bunch of other conventions a whole lot better. So, congrats to Mary. Congrats to Reed, Pop. You're getting a heck of a showrunner.
Yes.
And that brings us over to Big's Bullshite, Episode 7, News, Rumors, and Speculation. And we have a name for... Man, I should have looked up how to pronounce this. Macy Richardson Sellers. I'm hoping that was right.
Yeah. Okay. It's really easy.
Corsella.
Yeah.
Boy, that sounds weird saying it.
Yeah. It's like, it sounds like one name, Corsella. But it's Cor.
Corsella DeVille. No, wait, that's not how it works.
Corsec.
Yeah, so there's that. There's an interview with Chris White over at Slash Film. He is the new screenwriter for the standalone that reveals a whole lot of nothing other than the fact they're still using Gary Whitta's draft. And actually, speaking of Gary Whitta, we were listening to an interview with him on Tom Merritt and Veronica Belmont's podcast, Sword and Laser.
Yes.
And yeah, anyone who thought that Gary Whitta was leaving under... bad circumstances or anything like that. Oh, no. Nope, it was totally planned. He wrote the first draft, and that was intended to hand off, so... Gary Whitta was still very, very, very excited about the standalone, and folks who said that Lucasfilm had lost Whitta over some weird circumstances, not true at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's exciting. We still don't know anything about it.
Yep.
But yes, the reason we don't know anything is apparently, according to Gary on that podcast, if he says anything, Lucasfilm can apparently do a remote force choke.
I mean,
I wouldn't put it past them.
What do they say? The authors say at Celebration that they're going to be putting it, or not Celebration, like at Dragon Con, they always say they have a chip in their brain that's going to malfunction and like... kill them or something if they give spoilers.
That's part of the contract agreement.
It is.
All right, that's going to bring us over to Cammy's concerns. Bria is going to kick this off in just a moment. We have Annie Stoll on, and we are talking Sabine, My Rebel Sketchbook, and y'all are in for a treat. We recorded this yesterday, and it was a ton of fun, and there are some really interesting factoids of things that... that Annie and the author of this book helped recanonize.
Yeah, it was really, really cool.
So so stay tuned. We will see you on the other side.
Yep.
And here we are, thanks to the magic of time travel. We have Annie Stoll here on the podcast with us.
Oh my gosh, hi you guys. Thanks for having me.
We are so glad to have you here. For those of our listeners who may not know, Annie was the artist for the super awesome Sabine sketchbook that came out a couple weeks ago. Annie, we like to ask all of our guests the same first question. How did you become a Star Wars fan?
Oh my gosh. Okay.
I feel like sometimes we're opening Pandora's box when we ask that question.
When haven't I been a Star Wars fan? So I come from like a very Star Wars-y kind of family. My parents were into it. Actually, so trivia point, my dad took my mom on their second date to Return of the Jedi.
Aww.
And my mom had never seen any Star Wars films, so somehow I'm still alive and here. But, I think my fondest Star Wars memory, being a little kid is, my grandpa actually bought my brother and I a VHS player just so we could see Star Wars. And before that, like, I knew about Star Wars, like, my dad would tell it to me as, like, a bedtime story, like, just, like, an oral story of Star Wars. So it was just kind of, like, this story I'd heard from the time I was a little kid, and then when I got a little older, I actually got to see it, and, you know, I was super hooked, and, I think I was always a really big fan too because my little brother is blonde haired, blue eyes. I had like super long, you know, brown hair to my butt. So like we were like Luke and Leia. So I don't know, just always been like a huge Star Wars fan.
Aww. Cute. So you are the illustrator for Sabine's sketchbook.
Yeah.
So Have you always been interested in art and drawing, or is that something you learned or gradually got into as you grew up?
No, I think it's another thing where I've just always been into art. Ever since I was little, my mom would have arts and crafts and, you know, every kind of cool marker that smelled interesting. And I don't know if you remember those. They're like the little like scratch and sniff markers. Mm-hmm. I used to love those. And yeah, I just always drew. I always sketched. When I was in grade school, I would write a really terrible comic and then I would pass it along to all the classes beneath me. I had like a little like viewership. So my little like third grade mafia would like hand out my dumb little comics to like the second graders and so on. But yeah, no, I've always liked art. I always loved drawing. I got into it a lot when I was in high school. I had a couple of really great teachers. And then from there, I liked it so much that I really felt like, you know, this is something I want to pursue for the rest of my life. And so I went to college for graphic design.
Cool.
Awesome. Now, getting into Rebels in the sketchbook, had you seen Rebels before you'd started work on the book itself?
No, I hadn't. Rebels was not out at the point when I was asked to work on the book. I knew Rebels was going to happen, and that was as far as I knew. I was working on it this past summer. So some loose concept art was out, and that was it. It really wasn't a whole lot when I first started in on it. And I have to tell you, I was a huge fan the second I heard that Rebels was going to come out, and then to get to work on this book was like a dream come true.
Cool. So
it's basically teaching myself the whole time.
So obviously you saw the show afterwards, and like, so you are a big fan of the show, I'm guessing.
I am like a huge fan. I mean, when I was working on the book, I was given a style guide, which was pretty cool. So I got to have some insight that you might not have had yet, a little bit about story and things. I didn't know anything like who Fulcrum was or anything like that. But, you know, I had a little bit more insight into Sabine. But then when I saw the show, I was just, you know, over the moon because it's just so cool. And I liked Clone Wars a lot, but it took me a while to grow on Clone Wars. But the second I saw Rebels, I was just instantly like hooked.
So your favorite character, both to write and draw, of the Rebels cast, who would that be?
That's like an impossible question.
I know. I'm asking you to pick a favorite child.
I mean, I don't even know if I can. I will tell you this, that I am an absolute huge fan and advocate of Hera and Sabine. I think that in terms of the Star Wars universe, they're just my hands down favorite characters. And I know that's like probably gonna make a lot of people mad or whatever, but I absolutely love them. I think their dynamic is really cool. I mean, there's something about like just really excellently written, strong female characters that really appeals to me and I think has been missing from this universe a lot. I mean, you know, we had like Leia and like, you know, we could all dream about Mon Mothma, but, you know, Padme and Ahsoka too, but I'm listing all of them. But like, I mean, I feel like to me personally, these two really hit it home because you've got this amazing pilot that is super witty, super smart, and also very nurturing, which is usually you have characters and they're very like very hard, like they're either one way or the other, but Hera has a lot of sides to her, which I think we'll even just continue to learn more about. And then Sabine, like, oh my god, I could just go on forever about how amazing she is. You know, you've got this teenage girl, she's an artist, she's a Mandalorian, like what is not to love about her?
Going back one second, real, sorry, no, not I don't know how do you follow that up because Sabine and Hera. But going back one second, you said you got the gig in the summer. So how did you actually end up getting the job for this?
So before I had this job, I've worked with Lucasfilm, specifically Troy Alders, with design for merchandising for the past 3 years. The story of how I got that job, I actually crashed a portfolio review at New York Comic Con. It was supposed to be for pencilers and inkers only, but I brought my art and my graphic design portfolio review. So I actually met the art director there, and it kind of turned into a job interview on the spot. And I had started doing freelance for him ever since, stuff like t-shirt designs and things of that nature. So he already knew about my art, about my style, and I guess Studio Fun had pitched this book to Lucasfilm. And Troy then counterpitched to him. He said, oh, I have an artist I think would be perfect for this. We've worked with her before. And he actually had me compile a pitch deck together of all my drawings and all my sketches, and then the work that I had done released and unreleased for Lucasfilm to show to Studio Fun. And then as sort of a group, they decided to take me on.
That's awesome.
I was like dying.
Yeah, it's pretty much like, you know, a hint to people to go out and actually try to, you know, do stuff like that rather than, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big advocate of you never know what you can do unless you try and unless you ask questions. I mean, yeah. The worst thing he was going to say to me is, sorry, only pencils and inklers get out of this, you know, portfolio review. But the best thing is that he saw my art and saw that I did graphic design and did design for music. And that was something that he was looking for in some of the designs that they were putting together at the time.
Yeah. So, as far as the book went, like what was the process like for writing it? Cause Dan Wallace, was the authors. Mm-hmm. So did you work with him or the story group, or was it just pretty much, they said, okay, we need you to draw this. Like, did you see mm-hmm. the text beforehand, or how did that go about?
Yeah. So, when this is to my knowledge, I believe that Studio Fun pitched this as sort of a complete, almost complete book, and then Dan Wallace was attached to it, and he written it. By the time I got in on the project, they already had a rough script for the entire book made, because generally, and it's interesting, because usually my day job, you know, I'm a graphic designer, I'm an art director, so I'm on the other end of things where I'm pulling in illustrators. But for this, it was interesting because I was an illustrator. So usually in this kind of process, the illustrator is maybe one of the last pieces you put together. You already have the book detailed and you say, okay, I want an illustration on this page, this page, and this page. And what's interesting is that this book was a little bit more organic. It's not your typical book where you pull the illustrator in at the end, the illustrator submits thumbnails, and then you kind of go from there. This book was sort of working a little bit more on the fly. So I was given a script, which was a rough outline of what Dan had written. And I believe that Dan, the art director, Andrew, who, by the way, is the artist behind the Ezra Journal, and then the story group, they all had conversations that were back and forth with the script, and that I was not privy to. But I would get changes, I would get emails saying, hey, today we need you to do, you know, X, Y, and Z, please, you know, submit to us, you know, a Mandalorian picture of a Cubist painting, or, you know, something like that. So it was a little bit more organic, but in terms of, like, how it was written, I can't really speak to that. I will tell you, though, that I would doodle, like even when I'm doing an assignment, I doodle in the margins. And so I would write in little just off the cuff things I would think that Sabine would say. And Dan actually put them in the book and the story group approved them. So there you go.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it speaks to them as well that they're not as restrictive as you would think. I think they're very open to ideas and suggestions. And as far as Andrew being an art director, he did a really great job of being that bridge between illustrator, story group, and author.
So I'm going to ask you to pick a favorite child again.
Oh, no.
did you have a favorite design element or drawing in the book or something that just stuck out to you that you threw in there?
Yeah, well, in terms of Annie's, like, dorkiness level, there is a spread in the book where I was asked to, as Sabine, come up with sketches for the starboard. And all of us know that the starboard is what eventually, like, the Rebels based the Rebel Alliance crest on. So it was kind of, like, a very backwards way of making the sketches that go on to become, like, the Rebel Alliance symbol. And to me, I just was flipping out because that's, like, what a responsibility, but what a cool thing to be able to do. Like
how cool
yeah,
that you get
so
to,
I did it.
How cool that you get to draw this huge right? piece of lore.
Right. And it's interesting because I was only given the starboard logo. Like no one told me what a starboard looks like. So I actually had to do sketches of what I, as Sabine, imagine a starboard is. So that was another thing I was just freaking out about.
That's really cool. So,
sorry. Now I'm just staring at the starboard pages and all the sketches.
And yeah, right. Well, I mean, I thought a lot about, like, Phoenix and, like, those kind of metaphors where you're, like, rising from the ashes and how appropriate that is for the story of the Rebels.
Yeah, that's actually cool, because later, one of the other questions I had written down was, like, wanting to ask, like, what you thought, how that symbol turned into the Alliance symbol, because in the book it talks about, like, you know, how it's been around for a long time, and, like, it's cool to think about how that might have evolved.
Right, yeah, and I mean, from a design standpoint, Sabine right now is very much in the show trying to evoke people to call to action, but also trying to give them hope. I mean, that's kind of the theme of Rebels too, is that as much as they're rallying the troops to fight this empire, they're also trying to give the people hope and let them know, listen, these guys are not what we should be used to. Like, you have to have hope that things can be better and believe in your fellow human beings and your fellow alien beings and the whole nine yards. So, having a symbol that's very organic, that speaks to people in imagery of a bird, you know, you've got flight, you've got, you know, hope, you've got all kinds of symbols in there. And then from that bridging into the Rebel Alliance themselves, you know, once they become more mobilized, they are sort of a unit. They need the branding almost. And so it's a very interesting jump. And I think from Sabine to the Rebel Alliance logo, I think it's just sort of a more abstract sort of jump. So the meaning of the bird is now even further abstracted, but never really lost. I don't know if that helps.
I'm still staring at the pages, just completely. That was like the Mandalorian writing you did on there, right? I think kind of remember you saying that.
Yeah, there's a whole page that is all handwriting, and there's Mandalorian, Huttese, Rodian, Aqualish. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but yeah, like there's some really interesting stuff, and I actually got to do hand lettering for that, which was exciting.
Cool.
And I believe I came up with Rodian, so I think that might be the first in-canon Rodian that you've seen.
Huh.
And I don't know, I know that, like, Huttese was definitely something that was out there, but I don't think it was officially in canon. So a lot of these sort of, like, handwritten languages are confirming some fan languages that were out there, and, I mean, the story group said yes to it, so there you go.
That is super cool. I actually wanted to detour over to the Mandalorian stuff, because I really, really love that Mandalorian cubist style page you did. I mean, how many people get to just do, like, art, mini art critiques? Well, not like a full art critique, but like a mini art critique about a fictional culture in their work. Like, that was just a really cool page.
I remember reading the script of this page, and it really hit a lot of points for me. It really stood out for me. And especially as a fan of the show and art and Star Wars in general, I think it's really interesting. And we see a lot of the art from Mandalore in the Clone Wars. And just in general in the whole Star Wars universe, if you look in the background, there's a lot of just really beautiful art that suggests that this universe has a vibrant, evolving art history. And I really can't think of any other IP where I can feel like that. And I think it's one of the things that's awesome about Star Wars is that you really feel like you're in a universe, you know, like the art progresses, like there's, you know, history and meaning behind everything. And tying that back into this, just reading about the cubist style of Mandalorian, and there is an episode, I don't know the exact name, you guys could probably tell me, but where with Duchess Satine, and you see in the back behind her this grand sort of mural that's painted, and it's very much influenced by Pablo Picasso, not in universe, but it's that sort of very jarring cubist style. And then this page in Sabine's book actually speaks about how the style of cubism had gone out of style and then recently had become popular again. And Sabine specifically talks about how she really likes this art, and she feels that it's sending a positive message, but how people right now are looking at this art and seeing a negative to it. And so it's really interesting because she is critically thinking and critiquing and talking about art in her world. And it's interesting because a lot of us can relate to that in our own world.
Cool. So I random thought, I really loved that Sabine had to point out that it was her 7th sketchbook.
Yeah, I know.
And
where is 1 through 6?
Yeah. And obviously as an artist, I was wondering, like, how you said before that you love Sabine, so, you know, how do you relate to her as an artist?
Oh my gosh. Well, although I am no longer 16, I definitely remember what it was like to be 16, and I think part of that, especially when you're like trying to figure out, you know, who you are and what your style is and everything like that, is that you sketch anything and everything. And I still do that to this day where, you know, something mood strikes or whatever, like I'll bring out my, you know, pad of paper and I'll start drawing. And I think that Sabine has this sort of sense of wonderment, but also she's driven by understanding her world and expressing herself as well. And I think I'm a lot like that. I also think that I like trying all different kinds of things. Like, I won't just use one kind of paint. I'll try all different kinds of watercolors. I'll try acrylics. And I think that's really cool about Sabine is that she clearly experiments around and doesn't limit herself at all. I mean, you know, she'll paint a crazy mural in Ghost, and then, you know, clearly she has her sketchbook where she goes and puts further ideas down. I think that she's just a really, really cool character, and I personally just relate to her a lot. You know, I maybe don't live in an oppressive empire, but I definitely relate to the idea that, you know, sometimes your hardships turn you into a better person and make you more likely to help other people. And to me, that's something that really resonates.
And I can't help but look at this last page of the book. Can you talk about the importance of Sabine's influence on kids in regards to sort of embracing individuality and creativity?
Mm-hmm. Are you referring to the page with all the little, like, slogans?
And... Yeah. I love that page.
So this was I'll tell you the story behind it, and then I'll answer your question. So this page was originally typeset by the graphic designer, and it was a whole bunch of just like catchphrases. And I saw it, and I asked if it would be okay if I could just submit some hand lettered things for them to consider to do. So basically, it was a spread that was already done, and I took a bunch of the phrases and redrew them as Sabine, and they ended up putting this as a whole spread, which was really, really cool and exciting, and props to them for being awesome. There's one that says, "There's no ugly colors, why be boring, say no to imperial gray." and I think the quote was originally something along the lines of saying that, like, imperial gray is ugly, use all the different other colors. And I was like, you know what, Sabine would never say that because, you know, everyone's unique. Gray might be someone's favorite color, and that's totally okay. But what she's trying to tell people is that the Imperials have one color. They only let people use that color, so you should be yourself. You should be creative. So I kind of reworked that, and they actually reworked that back in there, which was really kind of cool. So to go back to talking about Sabine inspiring children, I think that when you're young, there's a phase where everyone really loves arts and crafts. And then as you get a little older, it kind of feels like, especially in school, like schools don't have the budget and, you know, like art kind of disappears and kids are told, oh, you're not talented, you're not creative, just, you know, stay in line. And I think Sabine's a kind of character that will inspire people to be like, you know what, you are creative, you can draw, you can express yourself, even if you're splattering paint, like color is beautiful and vibrant and so are you. So I think having a character that can keep kids creative and encourage them to try different things and to draw and to be themselves is nothing but positive. I wish I had a character like that when I was younger. I think a lot more of my friends would be artists with me if that was the case.
Oh. And then there's some of us who just would never, ever have any chance of being artists because we can't even do stick figures.
Well, no, that's the problem, right, though, is that, like, you can do stick figures, you can express yourself, and I think someone like Sabine would tell you, just keep practicing, keep trying. Like, even moving paint around is a fun act and can make you feel a lot better. And, you know, you should never think that you're not creative, that you're not artistic, because I swear every single person is if they try.
We all have artistic skills in different ways.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you have to find out, like, what your creativity can be. But, you know, to quote Sabine, try it. What's the worst that can happen?
Sorry, I just like making fun of my own artistic abilities because stick figure is really my max right there. But I wanted to ask you, what was it like mm-hmm. for you as someone who was a Star Wars fan and not just someone who was coming onto the book to draw it, but to get to mm-hmm. not only bring some stuff into canon, like the handwriting and the languages you mentioned before, but to also be a part of recanonizing small little details? I know this part was probably for the writing, but mm-hmm. there was one part where they mentioned the Vor's Concert of the Winds, and then mm-hmm. another part where, and I could be wrong about this, but you draw a boffin at least once in here. And I think that's now the first yes. sketch we have of what a boffin looks like in the new canon.
Yeah, so what page is that on? You picked up on that.
What page is that on?
There's no page numbers.
Darn it.
It's where they talk about the refugee camps, the Tarkin yep. towns, I think.
Well.
Yep.
Now so, I need to go look at that.
Yeah, corn. I was just asked to draw the aliens and draw the people and creatures that Sabine sees in her everyday life. And I wasn't given anything more than that. It was like, you know what the Star Wars universe is, so sketch some people. So I actually went out in New York City and sketched weird people on the subway and just people I would see and then turned them into Star Wars characters. And I've always been a really big fan of boffins. Because, I mean, so many of them died to bring us the plans, and I don't know, as, like, a little kid, like, I mean, I'm tearing up now, like, those poor boffins, you know, like, no one cares about I care about boffins. So, I worked in boffins wherever I could, because I'm actually really well aware of the fact that they've never been in canon before, and so, story group, if you're listening, I was like, man, maybe I can, like, pass in a boffin here, maybe they won't notice, but they do notice, and they actually let me put them in here, so I'm really excited about that.
This book is a surprising treasure trove of canon references now.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll show some boffins on Rebels.
I mean, that would be really cool. I know that I don't have any bearing on the show itself, so keep that in mind, but...
You can
Jay Filoni, call me. You got my number.
You did a lot of stuff with the Imperial propaganda, and what was it like working with creating this propaganda and then graffitiing all over it for the book?
Right. Well, they have a beautiful artist that has done a lot of amazing drawings and a lot of the propaganda signs that you've seen on the show. And they gave those to me and they basically said, here, mess these up Sabine style. And so as a street artist, it's kind of a dream come true because it's like, sure, I'll mess this up for you. But, you know, as an art director, designer, I was like, oh my God, this poor person's work, I'm going to draw mustaches all over it. But it was really, really fun. And when I do any kind of street art, I'm a big believer in that you actually have to do it genuinely. You really can't fake cool street art with Photoshop. So I actually made stencils and printed it out large, and I did a whole variety of just like weird like paper on top of paper, like paste ups and things like that. And I live in this sort of nice building, and I was outside like on the little patio area just graffitiing everywhere, and suddenly every little old lady had to like take their dog for a walk and make sure there wasn't a hooligan and like, you know, all this stuff. And I'm just sitting there like covered in paint, you know, with all these like, you know, Imperial things. And it was quite the culture shock for the old ladies of my building. But I think that it was really fun, and it definitely looks realistic. I think there's one that made it into the book where I turned the stormtrooper into like googly eyes and a purple beard. So,
that googly eye stormtrooper was one of my favorite things in the whole book.
Yeah, it was really fun. And a couple of those ones, too, I did, like, collage ensemble where I would, like, a lot of the green doodles. My secret trick, for those of you listening, is I draw an acetate, and then I scan the acetate into the computer. So there you go.
Bria, I'm going to let you ask the next question.
I can't imagine why, Nancy.
I don't know why we'd let Bria ask this one.
So let's talk about Hera a little. We're clearly moving away from the sketchbook a little, although I will say the pages on Hera and Kanan were were some of my favorite things.
Especially Kanan, my favorite. So I love that line.
Kanan, baby.
Kanan's also one of my favorite things. It's okay.
Yes. So let's talk about Hera and Kanan and Space Married.
Yes. So there's this awesome hashtag called Space Married, which I found out you started.
I did, yes.
Bria, that one has taken a life of its own. Way to go.
Yeah.
It really has.
It's interesting because I knew about that hashtag existing before I'd ever met you. So I think I almost tried to tell you about it too. And you're like, listen, I made it up.
I didn't put it quite like that. But
well, yeah, you're a lot nicer than that. But you know what I'm saying. But okay, before I go on further, I would like to point out that this is Annie Stoll, the opinion, not Sabine. So this is not canon or anything. But I, Annie Stoll, ship Hera and Kanan like you wouldn't even believe. Like that's
Yay.
My pairing. I really like them together. I don't know if they're actually married or not. I don't know if it actually, to me personally, matters. But I do like that there is this sort of couple with a very strong relationship, and it's not like a sappy like, oh my god, I love you so much, now I love you more. Like, it's not like that. It's an actual great representation of two people that care about each other very much. They squabble a little bit, but then they also are really kind to each other, and they've got each other's backs. And I think that in a universe where everyone's love relationships are, let's be real, a little messed up. These two are really, really solid. I think that's something really great to see.
Especially in a kid's show.
Yeah, especially in a kid's show. Because you know what? Someone's mom is always dead, or someone's dad is being mean. And it's like, you know what? Like,
someone's dad is killing younglings.
Yeah, you know, like, it's really refreshing to see the emphasis not be on that kind of the drama. And the drama in this show is more about finding oneself, being assured of hope, you know, like, it's a little more deep, I guess. And that I really like. I like that just starting off the ground, this couple is just a strong couple, and I don't have to, like, go beyond that. Like, we've got this. It's really cool. Plus, and this is super superficial, but Kanan's really cute, and Hera's adorable. I'm not gonna lie, my fiance kind of looks like Kanan in real life, so...
Ponytail and all?
No longer does he have a ponytail, but at one point in time he did.
Annie, can I embarrass you a little bit? And
sure.
So since he looks like Kanan, is it possible you and he cosplayed as Kanan and Hera at one point?
We did. So for New York Comic Con this year, we both cosplayed as Kanan and Hera. And we didn't think we'd meet anyone who even knew what Star Wars Rebels was. We both just loved the show so much and liked them as a couple. And, you know, the whole thing kind of worked. And we ended up meeting, like, all these people that totally knew what Star Wars Rebels was. And furthermore, also loved Kanan and Hera. And it was excellent. It was so great.
Aww,
we took the subway in full-on cosplay. It was intense.
That is impressive.
Yeah.
As someone who is really also... Funny. Go ahead, sorry.
No, go.
I would say, as someone else who has also taken, like, a public transportation system in full costume, mm-hmm. that was even, like, tamer than that. Like, I was not painted green. The looks you get from people.
Oh, yeah. So we were on the subway. We went, my boot kind of broke, so we had to stop in Penn Station and get glue. And then we went through Times Square. And it's really interesting because I know, like, there's a big issue with, like, cosplayers and being heckled. But my big heckle, some guy was like, yo, Fifth Element, what's up? That's where you went with it?
Like, yo,
I couldn't
Fifth
even be
Element.
Offended because... Oh my gosh, yeah, no, so...
I might have to use that as the episode title for this.
Yeah. Annie, if I ever meet you, that's the first thing I'm going to say to you.
Oh my god. Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, it's super awkward. I think the only other silly, awkward story I can tell you about being cosplay was Hera, because generally everyone was really cool, and people were like, oh man, are you from Star Wars? And I was like, yeah, I'm from Star Wars Rebels. Go watch the show. Like, you know, like, pumping it up. But I had this one person try to interview me, and she was like, oh, are you from the Death Star? And I was like, oh my god. It was like one of those like Comic-Con interviewers that like for some reason knew nothing about Star Wars, and it was like so embarrassing. But I was like, no, no, I'm from Star Wars Rebels. Go check it out.
That's like my mom when she asked me about going to Dragon Con, but she calls it Donkey Kong.
What? That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom always referred to my anime clubs as friendship clubs, so I relate.
Aw. So, in addition to Star Wars, what other... You went to Comic-Con, so I'd imagine you're pretty interested in other fandoms. So what other shows or movies or whatever do you like?
Jeez, that's like... What don't I like? No, seriously. Now I'm all blanking out. That was such a blank question. No, I mean, I'm a really big fan of comics, and especially indie comics. We're talking like fandoms. I guess my other really big fandom is Legend of Korra. I know, that's over. But yeah, no, and I'm really big into anime, and I'm actually getting into like mainstream comics. I just finished reading Hawkeye, which was really cool.
Yay,
and
Hawkeye.
Yeah, and my fiance's actually gotten me into like Spider-Gwen and Silk. Silk's actually drawn by a friend of mine, so I'm really excited about that.
Ooh.
But yeah, no, so I don't know, if it's geeky, I'd probably like it or watch it.
And I was just wondering for like, because you said you've always been a Star Wars fan, but like, had you, like, what sort of areas of Star Wars interest you the most, as far as like, you know, different eras, or, you know, do you read the books or the comics or whatever?
Yeah. So I read the Star Wars manga because I was that anime kid in school.
I'm right there with you.
It's actually pretty good. And I've always really been into just like the original trilogy time period. I was really resistant to like Clone Wars, and then my fiance basically forced me to watch it, and I turned into the biggest fan. Like, I really just had to get over like the first couple episodes, and then gone, done. I absolutely love it. I will say that the Clone Wars cartoon, the one that aired on, I think it was Cartoon Network, mm-hmm. that was really, really cool and kind of like got me back into liking the prequels and stuff like that. As far as video games, I've watched a lot of my friends play them, but I'm really bad at like FPS kind of games. If there was, like, a Star Wars RPG, I would be there. Just saying. Video game players. As far as books go, I recently have started getting into reading books. I just finished a bunch of John Jackson Miller books. And yes. Kenobi is honestly one of the best books ever written.
Yes.
So
yes.
There you go. Hashtag John Jackson Miller. And, yeah, I honestly I think it's really interesting. I'm going to liken it to when I first got into Doctor Who, which was that the first episode I ever saw of Doctor Who was the Christmas episode where, like, David Tennant first becomes a thing. And I was like, what is this show? This is the worst show. I don't understand it at all. Like, why is this trashy lady yelling at this guy? He's glowing. Like, I didn't get it. And then my friends had me watch Pompeii. And I was like, oh my god, this is the greatest show ever made. Sometimes it just takes you reading that one perfect thing to really make you go back and understand everything. And I think for me, that in, as far as like Star Wars books reading goes, that was Kenobi, where I was like, you know, I had read a couple books before, they were kind of tacky, and then I read Kenobi and I was like, oh god, I have to read every Star Wars book now. Like,
don't read everyone.
Can we hire John Jackson Miller to do everything? Is that possible?
I will talk.
We've been lobbying for that.
I'll talk about this more next week, but I want him to write a book about in case anyone hasn't watched Rebels last night, I'll refrain from saying who, but I want him to write a book about that person up until
yes
now.
We want him to write a book about Spoiler.
I would also like a book about Spoiler. That'd be great. Let's do it. And also, I read A New Dawn, and I really loved A New Dawn. That's some more Kanan Hara love.
Yes. That book was so good.
Yeah, I know. It was really great. I really appreciate John Jackson Miller's style of having a whole bunch of events and then just interweaving them together until you've just got this like beautiful braid of a story that you just can't put down. And I actually tweeted at him once, and he tweeted back to me, which was crazy. And he tweeted back to me that he has notes that he keeps, that you can actually go on his site and read like the behind the scenes and like his thoughts and all kinds of stuff like that. And to me, that was fascinating.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So tell us a little about your other work. I know you do a, you've got a comic you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My fiance and I, do a comic called Ode, and it's, all watercolor comic, and it's about two lady knights in a world that magic is dying. It's kind of how they progress through this world that basically rejects them. So if you like swords and magical deva creatures and sort of slow but pretty pacing, it's definitely the comic for you.
Cool.
I am all in on that.
Yeah, I love lady knights. I've always liked knights and strong female characters, and this comic is kind of my attempt at what I always want to put out into the world. So
now I have to ask, have you read the Tamora Pierce books then? Have you read
Lady Knights? Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, once upon a time when I was really young. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. What kind of late night fan would I be if I never actually wrote quote unquote late night?
I just like to make sure. Like, and you know, I like to preach the gospel to Maura Pierce whenever I get a chance. So.
Yeah, no, she's great. I read like all of her books when I was younger. And it's actually interesting. I was recently in a comic anthology called Valor where she actually was like a backer or something. It was crazy. So that was pretty cool. Or if she didn't back, she definitely tweeted about it. So I was kind of like, oh God, Senpai noticed. That was really cool.
And I have to say, as someone who does have one of your pieces, your watercolor work is absolutely gorgeous.
Oh geez. Well, thank you.
I'm so excited to finally get a frame for this Kanan and Hera piece you did and put up my wall. And
oh, yeah, exciting. Just...
We got some listener questions, so we'll go ahead and mm-hmm. ask those now. Megan asked, Sabine tried a lot of styles in her sketchbook. Do you see her choosing one as she gets older, or always a variety?
That's a really good question. I honestly would hope that she would keep doing different styles. A lot of times when you get older, people tell you as an illustrator, you need to stick to one style, and that's the style that you're going to, you know, get money from and whatever. But I think, just from a pure art standpoint, your style evolves as you get older. You pick and choose things that you like. And I think to always do the same thing would be boring. And I don't think that Sabine's the kind of person that would ever be boring. I think she would just keep evolving and keep learning and letting her surroundings influence her.
And we'll put you in Sabine's shoes for a moment. Why do you think she admired Death Watch so much? This is a question from Paul.
Okay, well, I think that's a cool question to ask, but I would disagree with it. I don't actually think that Sabine admires Death Watch so much as that she was inspired by their armor, if that makes any kind of sense. Death Watch are pretty brutal dudes, and I know that Sabine is a demolitions expert, but I don't think that she was into their agenda. If you do check out the page in the sketchbook, she's mostly pointing to their horns and thinking, oh man, should I put that on my armor? So that's my response to that.
Sticking with the Mandalorian theme, Tim asks, Mandalore has a very refined approach to art. How do you think this affected her style growing up?
Okay, this is going to be a long answer. Well, I think that to answer that question, you have to understand a little bit about the art history of Mandalore. And when you look at Mandalore, early on, there's a lot of emphasis on history painting, on architecture, on fine art, and on very sort of like realism types of art. And only later in the history, when things get a lot more bloody and a lot more intense and there's a lot more conflict, do you start seeing sort of cubist representation. The art gets a little more fragmented, maybe reflecting the society. But for the majority, I would think, of Sabine's life, she comes from this society that is very all about history, all about, honor. And how do you portray that? This very sort of stiff artistic style. And I think that Sabine rejects a lot of that, and it comes through in her art. Her art is very much expressionistic. Her art is extremely sort of sketchy. It's out of the lines. It's super postmodern, and it's everything that these things that came before her are not. It's like a direct reaction. And I think that is one of the things that I absolutely love about her. I love about the world, and I love that the creators, I think, have thought about. So to me, as an artist, like, that just speaks volume about who she is as a character, that she, you know, comes from this very sort of lineage, sort of, I guess you would say, culture, and just rejects that and brings back in exciting lines, movement, and just sort of a dynamo art style.
Cool. So, so rounding up, we want to let you tell people where they can find you online, and if there are any other projects you've been working on that you want people to know about or that you can tell us about.
Sure. Well, I always have something cooking with Lucasfilm, but I can't talk about it. Recently, at Sony, I just worked on some stuff for Pentatonix, if you've ever heard of those guys.
The acapella band?
Yeah, I'm the art director for those dudes.
Oh, awesome.
So, nice.
Yeah, there you go. So look forward to their next coming album. And I have a whole bunch of stuff. There you go. I'm putting together an anthology called 1001 Nights. And if you just look up the hashtag, like, 1001 Nights, you'll see a group of people that are putting together all kinds of art dedicated to strong characters. And you can find me on Twitter, at symbol A-N-I-I-S-T-O-L-L. And from there, you can find all my other sites.
Awesome. Well, Annie, thank you so much for coming on with us. Had an absolute blast.
Oh, this was so fun. Thank you so much for having me. It's my first podcast.
Oh, yay.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, we're honored. But yeah, thanks again. Had a great time, and we'll probably be looking to get you back sometime soon.
I'll come back anytime you want. This is great, you guys.
All right. Thanks again, Annie.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye, everybody.
And welcome back. And again, we want to thank Annie Stoll for coming along and doing this interview with us. It was a ton of fun.
Yeah, it was really cool. I she said that was her first podcast, and I don't believe her because she was a natural.
After that, I'm thinking, you know what? Annie Stoll needs her own podcast.
She does. And she can come back on ours whenever she wants.
Hey, let's bring back Women of Odd Enthusiasms and make her one of the hosts. That'd be fun, right?
Yeah. Sure, Bria will love that suggestion.
Oh, totally. Let's see. Anything else we need to bring up? Reminder, next week, Tuesday at 7 o'clock Eastern, we will be doing our big Rebels wrap-up episode. Yep. We've got Tom from Del Rey.
Yes.
I'm so excited. He will be on to do the wrap-up with us. We've been looking to get him onto the show for a while. So we'll have him on, and we'll try to embarrass him. So
I don't know if Tom can be embarrassed. I don't think so.
Well, being heard with us is kind of embarrassing, isn't it?
Nah.
Yeah, but super excited that, again, next Tuesday, 7 o'clock, we've got Tom from Del Rey joining us for our big Rebels wrap-up. We'll have Bria, and we'll see. Oh, it'll definitely just be Bria, because Sho will be flying back to Alaska.
Yes.
So... Nancy, myself, Bria, and Tom talking Rebels. Doesn't that sound like fun?
Yep.
All right, so let's go ahead and wrap things up. This episode of Tashi Station Radio is brought to you in part by Her Universe and Audible.com. Check out the links on the blog. Help us keep the site running. On Twitter, you can find us with the handles Tashi_Station. That's the official show account. You can find Nancy with Nancy Pants. That's Nancy with an I. You can find me with Lane Winry, LaneWinree. On Facebook, we're the Tashi Station Network. You can find us on the iTunes Store and on Stitcher. If you like what you hear, please do leave a review. It helps us grow the show. You can find our columns and news at Tashi-Station.net. Thanks for listening to another episode. Catch you all next Tuesday to talk Rebels.
Bye.
So long. This podcast has been brought to you by Majestic Giraffe Productions and is the official podcast of TashiStation.net. All Star Wars names, music, and logos are property of their respective trademark and copyright holders. Tashi Station Radio is not endorsed by Lucasfilm or any division of the company. Now go pick up some power converters.